This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Everything Evolves, the world's only podcast devoted exclusively to Evolve Wrestling. We are a proud member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, which you can find at voicesofwrestling.com or on the podcast app of your choice. And we're your hosts. We're the Wrong Boys. I'm Aaron Bentley. I'm joined by Aaron Taub. We have been called the most polite podcast in wrestling media. I think that's fair. You can see a lot of our polite thoughts at Evolve Pod on Twitter, or at my Twitter, at Aaron Like the Car, or at Aaron Taub, at AP Taub. Aaron, do you think we're a particularly polite podcast?
More or less. You know, yeah. Nine times out of ten.
Did you call us that on Twitter?
No.
I think it was Trinidad Chains.
Did they add us?
Yeah, like, I think it's when I was asking Gabe and Evolve issues, and Trinidad Chains thought I was very polite in the way that I think of them once they fixed it.
Yeah, I think that, we're polite guys. We have manners. You're from the South.
For sure.
You know about those things.
That's right. Okay, so now that that's out of the way, we are here to give you a rundown of what happened at Evolve this weekend. Sorry that we are about one day late, but both of us had plans on Monday night, so we had to push this back a day. But I'm sure everyone is still fiending for the Wrong Boys takes on this Evolve weekend, Evolve 96 and Evolve 97. Overall, AT, what do you come out of this weekend with your big takeaways?
Well, I feel good about this promotion. I feel like they established themselves and set some things up. And it was two good, solid shows. I think that the first night kind of did not meet the expectations I had for going in, but it was still a good show. And also I had some wonky technical issues that we'll talk about later that night. So I don't know. My perception of the show was skewed by sort of how I watched it. And then I thought the second night was a really good show. I really enjoyed it. And I thought the main event the second, like they sent me home happy. Is really, I think, the big thing that I would say. I thought the second night, the main event with Jaka versus Zack Sabre Jr. was excellent. So yeah, I feel good. I feel like you have some more in depth, better formulated thoughts about what you took from this weekend. So I think you should talk about them.
Well, the wrestling itself was kind of on the back burner for me this weekend. It was all good. There was nothing that was bad on these shows. There wasn't that much that was great until, like you said, the very last match of the weekend with Zack Sabre Jr. and Jaka. But there was lots of really good stuff. But the thing that I'm most excited about after this weekend, I feel like Evolve and Evolve promoter Gabe Sapolsky started to establish a real hierarchy in this promotion. It's something that we have complained about in the past, that everybody kind of seems to be bunched up together in this promotion. Coming out of this weekend, I feel like we have a really good idea of who exactly is on top, which they've always been pretty good at showing us who's at the top of the promotion. But now we got a better idea of who's right below those guys, who's right below those guys, and who's at the bottom of the card. That's something I really appreciate. And it a lot of times you go into these matches and Evolve, and this isn't always a bad thing, thinking either of these guys could win this match. Even when it's guys who seem more at the top of the card and guys who are at the bottom of the card. I think coming out of this weekend, Evolve told us that there are some guys who are going to lose to other guys and some guys who just aren't on the same level as other guys, which I like. That's cool for me. And part of what they did by building this hierarchy is create a lot of freshness, a lot of new matches that I'm excited for. Now, some of that was helped was that they brought in some new faces. AR Fox is a new face in the promotion. DJ Z, I didn't expect to be back, and now he's back, and there's some matches that I'm excited to see him in. And, of course, they added some preliminary talent. Did you get the same type of feel that I did of, like, some clear delineations between tiers of talent in Evolve?
Yeah, we're starting to see it. I think, obviously, some guys, you know, Darby Allin seemed to be moving up the card in terms of his big victories and two big wins for him. And then, you know, we started to see Jason Kincaid kind of slipping down into the prelims. I think that you saw some more stratification. Definitely we saw kind of, they seem to have Austin Theory right there, right beneath Darby Allin, kind of at the same level as a Fred Yehi. It's fascinating. I think we're still waiting to see where certain guys will fall out. I think it was a very quiet weekend for Tracy Williams, who was kind of almost lost in the shuffle this weekend. It seemed like there was more focus on his Catchpoint teammates, Jaka and Chris Dickinson. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of where he slots in. But otherwise, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's definitely a much better sense of where different guys stand and who should be able to beat whom coming out of this weekend. And I think that makes it, like, you know, now matches have more meaning when you kind of have an idea of who should and shouldn't win them.
Yeah, and I mean, Gabe mentioned in just the great piece by Justin Barrasso of SportsIllustrated.com. Gabe mentioned in that piece that maybe he'd become bored a little bit in his booking, the way that he was putting together Evolve shows. And now when you look back after seeing the booking this weekend, you can really see where Gabe's coming from when he says that. This showed a lot more care, a lot more attention paid to matchups and longer-term stories and just planting some seeds for stuff that can happen in the future, which I liked. The other big thing that happened this weekend was the addition of these three preliminary matches at the beginning of each card. They are 10-minute time limit matches featuring some guys we've seen before in this promotion, but all guys who are seen by Evolve, at least as up-and-coming talents. You were high on this idea coming into the shows. I was not. I was down on it for sure. You may have prevailed in your take on these. Were you happy with how they played out?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was kind of funny too, though. I didn't expect that they were going to be so explicit about them being preliminary matches. I thought it was just like, we're just going to have three more matches on the show. But it was sort of very, like, delineated that it was like, these are the first three matches of the show. These are the preliminary matches. They're 10-minute time limits. You know, we're having a different announce crew for them. So I thought that was interesting and kind of weird. Like, you could have just had the matches and had them go. Like, wrestling fans know to expect that the first match on the card isn't going to be, you know, a 40-minute epic, you know. But yeah, I was happy with it. We got to see some new talent, and some guys came out of it really shining. I think that KTB and Shane Mercer, that tag team, looks great. I think they're ready to just be in this tag team division at this point. I think it's good.
See, I came into it not excited about this idea, but I like the delineation. I like the 10-minute time limit. I think that's great. And we'll talk more about Jason Kincaid and how he fits in, but the fact that he kind of seems to have been pushed down a little bit, I think it's cool that there will be this real line of you're either above this line or you're below this line. And so I kind of liked that aspect to it. It is a little weird with, like, a different announce crew and different ring announcers even. I mean, everything has changed. That's whatever. I'm not against that. It's fine. But overall, I thought this was really cool, especially the way they focused on this 10-minute time limit, and then that came into play before the weekend was over. So that was cool.
Yeah, it's like they kind of have promotion and relegation in wrestling.
Right.
Which is great. Everyone who follows, I think, soccer in countries other than the United States, it's like really exciting when there's two teams at the bottom of the standings. And it's like, who's going to go up and who's going to go down? And yeah, it creates stakes. For me, That's like the one of the most important things in wrestling is stakes. Giving me a reason to care about the outcome of the matches. And we'll talk later about how, you know, in instances where it happens, when it works, I mean, that's, I don't know. That's why I watch, is to give a shit about what happens in these matches. And so, yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah. And if they can find a way to make the outcomes of these preliminary matches important, not just in the, oh, here's some cool guys that I haven't seen before, or I like this guy, I want to see what he can do, but for them to have the real stakes that are like, okay, this guy gets to move up to the featured card, this guy's going to get a shot at whoever, like that could be really cool. And they teased that there's going to be some of that.
Well, they did that with Shane Mercer and KTB won their match the first night and looked dominant, and then they got moved up to the main card against the Workhorsemen.
For sure. So I guess what I would have said is it would have been cool going into the match if they said.
Right. The winner of this match.
Right. But now we've been conditioned by the promotion going forward that if someone looks particularly impressive on the preliminary matches, we might see them moved up to the main card. So it has the same effect.
For sure.
All right. Well, let's go from there right into the preliminary matches on Evolve 96. You gave us a few of your overall thoughts on the show. Mine are pretty similar. I mean, we all had really high expectations for this card, for the featured part of the card, and it didn't really meet it, or didn't really meet them, unfortunately. And we'll go into those matches more as we go on. But it's funny because I came out of Evolve 96 like kind of down on the Evolve weekend in general, even though I thought they did some cool stuff story-wise. And but after 97, I'm like kind of jazzed again. So it was really cool. Anyway. The first match on Evolve 96 in Queens at the Elm Corps Center. No mention of Heatgate on the show or even on Twitter around this show, really. The first match, Dominic Guarini defeated Joey Lynch by submission with what he calls the Mighty Mouse, which is a German suplex into a cross arm breaker. Any strong thoughts on the opening match, AT?
I think it's cool that he's taken the Demetrius Johnson real life UFC spot and made it his own. And I thought both guys looked good. I thought Lynch looked strong and athletic and seemed like he had some cool moves. And I thought Guarini, I like that Guarini just comes out and goes right after you at the beginning of the match. Like this big lumbering guy like comes and tries to kick you and choke you out as fast as he can. And yeah, this was a fun little match. And Joey Lynch got a nice little please come back chant. Timothy Barr thought that they were yelling at him and saying, "You tapped out."
Yeah.
And then Trevin Adams had to be like, "No, no, no, you know, they're saying Boo Earns, you know."
Right?
Funny. That was a funny little moment. And yeah, a totally serviceable quick opener.
Yeah, I'm not that high on Guarini to this point, and I haven't gotten to see him really do his thing, so I'm gonna hold back on that. But they're trying to present him as a real badass, a real shooter, and I haven't gotten there with that yet. I mean, clearly the guy could beat the piss out of me in a real fight and a lot of people, but I'm not sure that that's come across the screen on Evolve yet. Joey Lynch, I thought, looked really smooth and good, just like a good professional wrestler.
Right. It's like, oh, you seem ready. You can do you can do more matches here. You can be a... Like, you're definitely qualified to be on these prelims and to continue doing this.
Absolutely. I was like, yeah, this guy's really good. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good match. So the next match, the aforementioned Shane Mercer and Kyle the Beast took on Stevie Fierce and Matt Nix from Freelance Wrestling. You know, obviously the promotion thought it was impressive. You liked them, AT, but what stood out to you in this match?
Yeah, I mean, Shane Mercer and Kyle the Beast are just a good team. I mean, I think it seems like they're pretty high on Shane Mercer. It seemed like in both matches that we saw, it seemed like the matches were put together to show off his strength, which is awesome. Like, he's just really, really strong. And he's not a guy who looks like he would be extremely strong when you just look at him. But he's really, I mean, I don't know. You just shrug your shoulders, but I don't know. He's like big, but he doesn't look like, I don't know.
Well, he's not. I don't think he's that tall,
right?
But he's definitely he's ripped up.
Yeah. And so, yeah, his strength is great, and he's just tossing guys around. I thought KTB, we saw him at Joey Janela. He was one of the breakout stars of Joey Janela's spring break.
For sure.
And he looked great there.
Yeah, he had a great match with Sami Callihan on that show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's really good. And I thought that it seems like they have pretty good chemistry as a team, too. You know, they finished the match with, you know, KTB basically sort of like suplexing Stevie Fierce from the apron into Shane Mercer's arms. And then he went and hit that moonsault and battery, moonsault follow-away slam for the win. So, yeah, I thought that they looked really good. Not the most impressive effort for the freelance boys. It seemed like just both of these matches, they just didn't quite. And we've been, you know, I thought Stevie Fierce looked great the last time we saw him. But I thought that on these shows, this team, it just seemed like they didn't quite click as a team. It seemed like they're still sort of figuring out what their kind of like character should be as a team. And then there was like one or two spots that just like didn't look good. There was one moment too, and this may have been, you know, KTB and Shane Mercer's fault, but there was one moment where it was like Mercer was like suplexing Matty Nix, and then he had his like, he just kind of like held his arm out to do a clothesline, and Stevie Fierce just ran into him, and it just didn't look, it didn't look good. It looked like that shouldn't hurt Stevie Fierce. I don't know. That was kind of an awkward spot. It just didn't seem like, I don't know. They weren't as sharp as Nix and Fierce weren't as sharp as we'd seen them be in the past. What are your thoughts?
There was quite a bit of weirdness in the match of just, it seemed like transitioning from spot to spot. And, you know, I have no clue who's to blame for that, but there was a lot of that in between moves. I don't know if Fierce and Nix have worked together outside of Evolving. They're in the same promotion, but I don't think Mercer and KTB have worked together. So, you know, it's understandable that there would be some issues here. I will say, in this match and his match the next night, Fierce did not get a lot of chances to be on offense. A lot of his was selling. And I thought he did a great job in this match of making Mercer and Kyle the Beast look really good. I thought he sold their offense excellently. And, you know, he didn't really get a chance to go after them. He was kind of playing the chicken shit heel, which I thought he did a really good job of. So I like that. And, you know, on that same level, like you said, I mean, Mercer and Kyle the Beast were great. I mean, it made a ton of sense for them to move on to the main card the next night. I've been a big Shane Mercer fan for a couple of years now, since I first saw him. I'd be remiss if I didn't add that he's from Lexington, Kentucky, of course. And
go blue.
That's right. Go big blue. So, you know, I'm a big Shane Mercer fan already. But it's like this promotion is clearly very high on Mercer. And I feel like this was his first national, the first time he got a really big look on a national promotion. And I wouldn't be surprised if he really takes off in 2018. I think there's a good chance of that.
I mean, so, I think this is two consecutive Evolve weekends where it's like, oh yeah, Shane Mercer looked good again. He's good.
One of the most impressive things about him to me is on that moonsault and battery, he got him up, but it was, for a second, I thought he was going to lose him, but he's so strong that he was able to save it. It never looked bad. It looked great. And then to finish off the move, I mean, he looks really good. So I'm excited to see more of him going forward. The last of the preliminary matches, Jared 120 defeats Stephen Wolfe. I'm not getting on the Jared bandwagon. Sorry to say. I really like Stephen Wolfe, but Jared did the exact same matches or the exact same moves that he did last Evolve weekend and the exact same moves that he did on Evolve 97. And I just don't care.
Well, they plugged the YouTube channel, which was great. It was great to see them get some time. And Jarek has a new manager, his lovely magician's assistant, Candy Cartwright. So I think that's like, I think it's like a cool little act they have going there. He has his like weird mask. I don't know. I'm not ready to be on the Jarek bandwagon, but he was all right. Like, I thought this was fine. I thought he looked better the next night against Jason Kincaid. We'll talk about that. I thought this match was like, okay. it didn't like, I don't know. I don't really have too many thoughts about it. In my notes, I just wrote, it was fine.
Yeah, I wrote fine, but Jared does nothing for me. So yeah, they're pretty much. Did you think this was a weird time to debut only the second woman in the promotion who is literally just there to be in a small dress that shows off her breasts?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's like,
Like, it makes sense. I get the act. It makes a ton
right.
of sense.
It makes sense for this guy who you can't stand to have, like, an attractive valet, right?
Yeah, for sure. It just seemed, like, tone deaf to the moment.
Yeah, kind of. But I don't know. It's like,
she didn't talk. I mean, you know, like,
right. No, she doesn't talk. She just kind of like stands
right.
there.
Well, maybe you give her a microphone and she introduces him, or, you know.
Something. Yeah, she interfered a little, right? She was a distraction.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, but right. But no, I mean, she's, you know, it's not like,
right.
Not a female character with like a ton of agency.
Right. No, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's just tough with wrestling because it's just like, I don't know. It's like that sort of like the male gaze is everywhere. I don't know. Like, it's like, yeah, in this moment where we're having this whole conversation around sexual assault and sexual harassment and sexual abuse, like, yeah, it's probably not like the most woke thing you can do, but I didn't think of it as being like I wasn't offended by it.
No, the only problem I really had was commentary, you know, really pointing out how good she looked in this dress. And I was like, all right, let's be cool on that.
Yeah. I mean, I missed that. I probably, it's like, if I had caught that, I'd probably be like, not like the best moment for the intense, like explicit male gaze, but
I
don't know
about that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it would be cool if at some point we got a female character in this promotion who like talked and we were meant to cheer for them. And like, they like had some personality, even if they're not going to have women's matches, you could have like a female manager character who was like cool and good and smart and thoughtful and funny or whatever.
Right. I mean, even Joanna seems to be gone.
Yes, 2 weekends in a row, no Joanna, which is sad.
Bad news, really bad news.
Yeah, I thought she did a good job ring announcing.
She was great.
Yeah, so she's, I don't know if she's out for good, but because last month they said like for Joanna Rose, who's like not here, you know, when they signed off, but this time I don't think they said that, so I don't know if she's gone. But
I got the sense she was gone, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, so that takes us into the main card. And interestingly enough, this is about the time I got to start watching the show on the first night live. I caught up with the other matches later. But this was amazing. So now I did go a little bit close to bell time and ordered the show. And, you know, if you bought the show, you go in, it's kind of difficult to navigate this website anyway, but you find the show. You purchase it, then you got to click on My WWN and then on digital purchases, and it shows all the things you've ever bought. Apparently, if you're Aaron Taub, it shows that you bought a Curt Hawkins shoot interview, which whatever. That's like, you know, different people buy different things. I'm sure you were going through a tough time.
Yeah, it's like that's when you know you're like kind of like dealing with a little depression and that it's time to reevaluate things. Is when not only did I watch the Curt Hawkins shoot interview, like I paid for it. I didn't steal it off a torrent site or anything. Like I was like, no, like this is, I'm paying for this. And I didn't even finish all of it. I watched like half of it and I was like, oh, this is so boring. Like kind of like halfway through, I kind of was like, oh, we've like really kind of hit rock bottom here. It's like really time to like sort of reevaluate like how much wrestling is going to be a part of my life, you know, where you're just like, yeah, this is a great hobby, but I like probably don't need to be watching, you know, the Curt Hawkins shoot interview.
I bought the DVD of the Chris Hero, like my year in wrestling interview with Rob Naylor.
Oh.
Did you ever see anything about that?
No. How was it?
It rules. It was like last year, you know, it was clear, like when you look back now, it's clear that he was leaving the Indies and he knew that. So he wanted to do this cool thing. Mm-hmm. And so he just had a notebook and went through every match he worked that year and talked about like getting it set up and little stories about the people he worked with or anything that happened on that trip. And it was fascinating.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Like, did you get some good at some point? I hope you'll like share the insights that you learned about Evolve.
Oh, yes. I'll be happy
on this show. Yeah.
Of course. At some point, I should have insights about Evolve on this show.
Yeah. So, yeah, right.
Good. All right. Anyway, I would click on digital purchases, and there's no Evolve 96. It's just not showing up, right? So I do what any young man in 2017 does, and I start tweeting at people to ask them what's going on. Why can't I load this up? Is this a conspiracy against the wrong boys? And dear listeners, no one would respond to me. I added Gabe Sapolsky. I added WWN Evolve, WWN Live. I thought about adding Lenny Leonard. I was just going everywhere. Nobody cared. Nobody responded. I sent an email on the support tab on the website. Nothing. I even DM'd Gabe. Of like, Gabe, can you fix this for me, big man?
Like, I know we've been through a lot.
We have.
But, you know.
But I'm trying to pay for your product. So
yeah.
Let me watch it. Nothing. Okay. So about halfway through Zach and DJ Z, it magically shows up. I keep clicking it, you know, waiting for it to show up. It shows up. Then my man Gabe gets on Twitter and he's like, oh, hey, I haven't been on Twitter. Is the stream working for everyone? It rules.
Everyone in wrestling has a poster's mentality. We've said it on the show before. And that's some primo trolling.
Yeah, I retweeted it.
You gotta tip your cap. I know.
Yeah, but I wanted him to know that I knew. So I hit him with a retweet. But anyway. All right, move into the main portion of the card. And to break this out, which I thought was smart, they have Zach cut a promo. And Zach basically says, look, I know in 2018 this company is all about building new stars, but there are no new stars. And he starts to say, until you beat me. And he changes his mind and says, until you can even show that you can hang with me. And I guess the big takeaway line from this promo was, Zach said, I am the barometer. So it kind of told us what we were going to see going forward in these Zach matches. And it played out in the very first match. Non-title match, Zach against DJ Z. Zach ultimately gets the victory with the European clutch. And I thought the point of this match was to show that DJ Z could hang with Zack Sabre Jr. He's on that level. Is that what you took from the match?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely one of the things, you know, as far as like he was able to sort of trade hold with him on the mat. And yeah, this was a good match. I don't think it quite got to like a very like a high sort of dramatic closing stretch. Like it didn't really like, it wasn't like an incredible match where it got to like, this is not a great match review on my part, but like there weren't a lot of like dramatic near falls. It didn't really sort of reach that fever pitch of intensity that you like to see in like a truly great match. But I thought it was very good. It was fun. They you know, it was good to see DJZ hang with him. I thought it was a good back and forth match with two guys who are clearly very talented and very smooth. And I'm enjoying DJZ. I like when he points to the music director and has them play his air horns. You know, I think he's cool.
I love a Zach match where he gets pissed off and decides to focus in on a body part, which he did in this match and really went after DJZ's arm. I thought what brought down the match, and this until Zach and Jaka, this was my favorite match of the weekend. So it tells you kind of what I thought here. But I thought what brought it down was there wasn't DJZ's selling wasn't as compelling as the match went on. Like, there's that moment where, you know, Zach gets him in an armbar again. And then after that, you feel like DJZ should have been, you know, should have been like death, and his arm really should have been in trouble. But that's not what we saw. And I know Zach does a lot of these matches where he wins with like this back bridge of doom, but maybe it wouldn't have made sense story-wise. But I would have liked to have seen it with the story inside the match to have ended with some sort of armbar or something like that to really pay off the story. But the story they were telling was that DJZ could hang with him, not the story that I wanted them to tell. So that's fine. The next match was Jason Kincaid against the debuting AR Fox. And not only AR Fox, but with his entire posse, which I really enjoyed. Like, did you not think that this was one of the freshest things to come to Evolve in a long time? Like, this group of people?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love AR Fox and his posse. I love how they come out and like jump up and down and put their fingers in the air. Like, I love his arrogance. I love his like cool theme song. Yeah, I'm on board with AR Fox. I thought he was a lot of fun this weekend. I thought this match was solid. I like that they kind of like it seems like he's using the handshake spot at the beginning of the match to like establish his character and that of his opponent in both matches this weekend. Like with this one with Jason Kincaid like forcing him to do a handshake and then putting Fox's hands like a prayer hands. So yeah, this was cool. It was kind of I liked, you know, seeing them do their weird offense to each other. And just everything Fox does looks really, really like sharp and forceful and smooth, I guess. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I mentioned on Twitter that I don't catch a lot of AR Fox matches for whatever reason. And it really stuck out to me how athletic he is watching this. I was like, wow, like this guy is a high level athlete. I don't know what his athletic background is, if any, but I feel like he's somebody who could have been a high level college athlete. Don't really know. But, you know, he gets showed off with that cool, the low main pain and then into a 450. And that's how he won the match. I did think, and this is just a Kincaid issue for me, but a lot of the match did seem to be at about 3/4 speed. It's just some weird transition-y stuff, but I think that's just what you get in a Jason Kincaid match.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to point out is I like that like AR Fox has this posse of people that come to the ring with him, and he uses them in cool spots. Like when Kincaid hit like a spring, like kind of like an over the ropes, like springboard stunner or something, like, you know, something to that effect. I don't think I described it correctly, but like into the posse, and then the next night we saw more of that. Like, I like that it's like, oh, you have this group of people on the outside. Why not like work them into like a really fun, fresh and creative dive spot of some sort?
But how does payment work in this situation? Like, Gabe is booking AR Fox. Does AR Fox say, yeah, but I'm going to do this whole act with my entourage, and they got to get paid? Or, I mean, is he splitting his fee? What's going on here?
Well, I think one of them, the woman, Ayla Fox, I assume is his wife, right?
I have no idea, but I got the same thought too, yes.
Right, yeah. So maybe she's like, all right, like, I'm going to the shows with Bay. You know, I'm just going to, you know, I can do this. And I think the other people are like some of his students, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. He's a trainer of a wrestling school in Atlanta, and I think that's where the posse comes from.
Okay,
you think he trained Austin Theory?
Yeah, so maybe these are guys who are students, and they're getting a little, you know, part of their
yeah.
Part of their deal is to play a part of this.
They're getting to be a part of this act. They get to meet people. That would be my guess of the situation. But yeah, I think he's based in Atlanta, because that's where the school is.
So you're a big fan of like unpaid internships or what?
Whoa. Turned it around on me. Yeah, well, as a member of the media class, right? Yeah, I just love them. That's unpaid right. Internships.
That's right. All right. So at the end of this, after this match, we got the Battle of the Breakout Stars. And Darby Allin emerged victorious as he defeated Austin Theory with The Last Supper. Did this feel like a battle of breakout stars?
Yeah, for the most part. I thought that, this is kind of where like my technical issues kind of were interesting in that, like, so I usually watch shows on my computer, but this time I decided to watch a show. Like, I wasn't able to watch a show live because I had a birthday party, and so I was watching it like Sunday morning at like 7:30 in the morning. I started watching it, and I was Chromecasting it to my TV, but I didn't want to wake up my girlfriend because I feel like that would be the end of our relationship if like she was woken up at 8 a.m. to independent wrestling. And so I have these like little I bought these headphones specifically for watching wrestling, which are basically, they use like a radio frequency to connect to the television. And so the like, the sound was not coming through correctly. Like, it wasn't tuned to the television properly. And so I just turned out I wasn't getting all the sound. And so the crowd reactions to me were muted, not like totally like mute, but just like not as loud as they would have been. Like, when I went back and watched the show on my computer, things were louder. So I couldn't tell like how into this the crowd was, I guess. But I thought that, or at least at the end, like, I think at the first like 2/3 of this match, I thought were great. I thought Darby had great intensity. I loved Theory like throwing him into the post. I thought that this match was just like, yeah, these are like, Darby's so good. Like, when he's yelling and when he's screaming in Priscilla Kelly's face and he's fired up, I thought he just looked great. And I thought that this was a really good match for most of it, but then the end just didn't quite click. I thought that, for instance, when Darby kicked out of the Theory KO, I thought that that should have been a big moment, but it didn't feel like they built to it properly. So, like, it felt sort of abrupt. So when it happened, I was like, oh, I guess that's the end of the match. Like, it seems kind of random. But then when he kicked out, I was like, oh, I guess that makes sense. Instead of being like, oh, man, that's the finish. Oh, no. You know, he kicks out. You know, so I thought that it didn't just, like, it felt like the finishing stretch just wasn't quite there. But, and it didn't seem like the crowd popped that big for that kick out. Can you, like, what was your perception of how they responded to it?
I'm not sure about that particular spot, but I did feel like what I got was that the crowd really loved Darby. Like, I feel like he is a beloved figure in this promotion at this point, which is what they're going for. You know, he's the a big, huge underdog, and easy for guys like you and me to get behind Darby and get excited for him. Tough when he's on a collision course with Zack Sabre Jr., but Zack does seem to be taking on more of a harder edge. So I think that is meant to play against Darby and his story coming up through the ranks. So I thought this was a very good, well, very good might be pushing it, but a really good match. What I really liked about it from a story perspective was that Theory basically loses the match because Priscilla Kelly wants him to take Darby up top to do like a super Theory KO after the first one doesn't work. So we get this real split between this match and the match the next night that shows us how important Priscilla Kelly is to Austin Theory and how the huge role that she plays in his success. So I thought that was the really interesting part of this to me, but also that, I don't know, I've been up and down on Darby Allin just because I really liked the story with him of, you know, I'm going to become a real serious wrestler so that people take me seriously, and I'm going to take on Zack Sabre Jr. I didn't really see it building in the way I wanted it to. But starting with this match and the mini doc that they put out before this match, like, I can feel myself really starting to get behind this guy and really being excited to see the rest of his rise and his eventual match with Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, he's really getting there.
Yes.
He's really, really getting there. And at first, when he was first calling out Zack Sabre Jr. way back at that show, at those shows in, I think, in Chicago in May, after Zack Sabre Jr. beat Ethan Page, it was like, this is absurd. But now it's like closer and closer. You're like, yeah, I'm ready for this match. This this is legit. I'm ready to see it. It'll be good.
Yeah, and he deserves the lion's share of the credit for the improvements that he's made. But I think Gabe deserves some credit for seeing this, like seeing in Darby enough to put him on the path of getting to challenge Zach eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. And the mini docs have, I think it's like two guys.
Kenny Johnson deserves a lot of.
Yeah, shout out to Kenny. And I feel like Darby Allin and Jason Kincaid are kind of the two guys in the promotion now that Ethan Page is gone, who are like most committed to doing work on their own time to cut promos and send in mini docs. And it makes them, they're much more compelling characters as a result. There should be more promos and more stuff like that, that sort of gets across these people's characters and makes you invest in them.
I wonder if we'll get more of that now that this does seem to be a new era of storytelling in this promotion. So I wonder if we'll get a little more of that as we go forward. I hope so. I was also going to say, I agree with you about the match layout, but we got to remember these are two very new young wrestlers. So yeah, they're not putting together a five-star match yet, but they're both really making a lot of progress and are two guys that I look forward to watching every Evolve weekend.
For sure.
Okay, so after this, it was supposed to be intermission. And, you know, they start running the mini docs and whatnot, as they usually do during intermission. And apparently what happened during this was that William Regal came out and cut a promo about that Darby Allin and Austin Theory were on their way to being breakout stars in 2018, but mentioned that for them to really cash in on that, they would have to win titles in 2018. Now, first, let's just say, like, didn't you feel that it was teased that Regal was going to be on camera?
I don't know if it was teased that he was going to be on camera, but it definitely seemed like it was going to be something more important and impactful than just being like, you guys are good. You know?
Right. I mean, I don't know. I got the sense that what they were trying to get across was that if one of these guys could win a title, they would probably get a shot in NXT. Or, you know, that it was like a way, there was another road for them to cross that was all that was holding them back from getting a shot with WWE in some way. I don't know if I was supposed to take it that way, but I did.
Gotcha. Yeah, I didn't take it that way, but that makes sense.
Yeah, but it definitely, like we talked about it on the last show, it seemed like Regal was going to do something really important. And
yeah, I made a point, remember? I was like super obnoxious about it. I was like, hey, you have to tell him about, like, you know, what we saw in the Justin Barrasso piece about how this is going to be a super important moment.
Oh, yeah. Our pal Justin did talk about that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't important. That scoop didn't work out. So we come back, like cutting through intermission, and Jason Kincaid is in the ring cutting a promo on Austin Theory. And my friend, this promo was it rhymed. He spoke in rhymes. I thought that I wasn't interested in Jason Kincaid, and then I heard him do a promo that rhymed, and now I just I'm not sure if his death or my death would be more satisfying at that very moment as I'm watching that. I'm not sure which would have made me feel better.
That's savage. Yeah, it wasn't good. It was very...
It was so bad.
It was very, like, freshman dorm. You know, it was like a guy in your freshman dorm, kind of just like...
Yeah, I think he's doing a slam poet gimmick.
Yeah.
And so it's super like a freshman dorm. Maybe that's where he's... I mean, think about it. He's like a white dude with, like, you know, not dreads, but like... what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. But you know what? Everybody knows what I mean. So he's that. He looks like he smells of patchouli. He's like going through this spiritual phase. What if Jason Kincaid is like a college freshman? What if that's his gimmick?
Yeah, it's like the other stuff has really, a lot of the other stuff he's done has really connected with me, but this was like a little too much for me, I think.
Yeah, it was bad. So he seems to start to snap. Like, we're finally going to see Kincaid reach his breaking point by the end of this, because he's so broken up about what Theory is becoming with Priscilla Kelly. And he looks like he's about to really lose it, and he goes in like he's going to attack Theory, but Priscilla Kelly is in front of Theory. And Kincaid realizes that he's about to hit Kelly and, you know, kind of backs away from that, leaves the ring like he's really frightened at how close he was to the edge. That was fine, I guess, but he'd already ruined it for me with the rhyming promo. Any thoughts on this segment other than what we've already said,
like,
I guess?
I feel like we covered it. Yeah. Okay. I mean, all right. Like the general, like, sort of like broad strokes of the story. And I thought that, like, some of the other stuff was good, but yeah.
All right. Evolve Tag Team Championship match, Jaka and Tracy Williams taking on James Drake and Anthony Henry. Important to note from the start that Tracy Williams is replacing Chris Dickinson, who was suspended for the weekend for his actions regarding Rob Killjoy at the previous Evolve weekend. So this match goes to a no contest because the end interferes. I want to quickly say on this whole Chris Dickinson thing, don't you think it's really weird for them to refer on commentary to the fact that he's being suspended? Like, they're referring so prominently to why he's being suspended when it's like, but so you're telling me that this is fake?
Right. I hated that. It was like, cause it was like, cause they're like the incident, you know, with their match, you know, a couple months ago. And it's like, okay, but like, you don't say what the incident is. The people who know what the incident is are like, oh yeah, like the real life thing that happened of him like beating up this wrestler for real for a couple seconds. Like, I don't know, make something up. You can make up anything. You could film a segment where he, like, you know, I know he does whatever, right? There's like, it's your world. You're creating it. You can make up any reason you want for him not being on these shows. It just feels like kind of lazy to be like, Chris Dickinson is suspended for, you know, the thing.
He's suspended for like actually hitting someone.
Right. It's like, he was kicking too much ass, you know, throw him out. I don't know. It's just like, it was dumb and lazy. And one of those things where you're like, I don't know. Come on, man. Tie up your loose ends, cross your T's, dot your I's, come up with a reason for why this guy's suspended.
Right. They did not do that. Yeah. Instead, we got a decent little match that was broken up when the end came out. What did you think about this match before the end interfered?
It felt like it didn't really click with me. I guess it just felt like a lot of moves. I guess I remember thinking, I'm like, what even is, like, I remember just thinking, like, I was like in the middle of the match, I was like, what's the story of this match? Like, what's going on here? What are my thoughts? And I was like, I don't really, it's just kind of happening. I don't know. It didn't feel like there was, nothing was like stood out as bad, but it didn't really, I wasn't really captivated by it. And then when the end ran in, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I get it. I guess they were just like doing whatever they had to do until the big run in came.
Yeah. I guess it was the expectations game for me because I was afraid Tracy was going to slow this down and make it into a match that I don't like. And when it was kind of fast paced, I really enjoyed it. I was like, oh, cool. Like, Tracy's not slowing this down. And Tracy's really cool when he's not, like, spending, you know, Triple H amounts of time on a leg, and he's just kind of being, like, hard-hitting and fast-paced and doing his thing. Like, he can be really cool. So I was enjoying that. So I was kind of bummed when the end came out, but I thought this turned into a pretty cool little segment where the end comes out, and then, of course, Chris Dickinson pops out and kind of lays out the end, which I was like, whoa, are we burying the end this quickly? But instead it turned into a really cool brawl between the end, Jaka and Tracy and Chris Dickinson, and the Workhorsemen. So everybody was kind of going at each other. Did you like, when it actually turned into the brawl, did you like it better than you did the match?
Yeah. I mean, I think for a guy who was like supposedly suspended for real life bad behavior, Like, they made Chris Dickinson look like a huge star here. When he comes in and hits those big German suplexes on the two on Odinson and Perot, these two giant dudes, like, he kind of got like the Stone Cold Steve Austin push this weekend as far as being like this anti-authority dude who like is angry and runs in and like looks like a badass and a killer. So that was cool. Like, I was like fire. I was like, oh, that was a sick run in. And then the brawl was intense and heated, and you know, it was good that I think that at this point the end left standing tall after they didn't at the last couple of shows. And yeah, it was a good, fiery, schmozzy, all over the place brawl. I bet it was a lot of fun live because it was like watching, you know, from home. It was like, you know, you couldn't follow all the action at once, and it was all just kind of happening all over the venue. So yeah, I thought that this was a good segment, and I thought Dickinson, you know, like, I don't know, we'll talk about the next night too, but it was like for a guy that they were like theoretically upset with, maybe. Unless the Ugly Duckling things was like an elaborate work shoot thing. I don't know. They certainly, if they were mad at him, it seems like they forgave him.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of is, you know, he probably didn't get paid the same he would as if he worked the matches, if he worked the shows. So he's probably getting like an appearance fee, but not the full amount that he's used to getting on these weekends. So it might've been more punishment in that way, but yeah, he looked better on these shows than he has in a while. So it was like, not punishment from that perspective.
Yeah.
I thought this was cool. The only weird thing I thought was that the end did the super collider like Authors of Pain do, which I think is a really signature spot for them. So it's not the one that I would choose to do, but they are big and strong and it looked cool. But I was on it as I watched it. The next match was the no rope break match between Matt Riddle and Fred Yehi. Riddle wins with the Bro Mission. We talked a lot about the no rope break stip on the last show. How did you think it played out in this match?
I thought it worked really well here. I thought that this was a really good, really physical match. I thought it did feel kind of like a fight. And I think it also helped the crowd help this one, telling Fred Yehi to, you know, show us the feet. And he was a sweetie, and he obliged, which is, like, credit to Fred Yehi for being, like a dude who wrestles in shoes all the time. Like, imagine, like, you were, like, a teacher or you as a lawyer. Like, all of a sudden the judge was like, you should just take your shoes off and do your job as normal. And you're like, okay, I guess I'm just going to do this barefoot. Like, or, like, I don't know. Or if you were, like, a job that, like, actually involved physical labor. Like, if you were, like, a garbage man. And they were, you know, all of a sudden your boss was like, yeah, just like take your shoes off right now and do this job barefoot. And Fred Yehi was like, all right, I guess I'm doing this. Like, it was kind of a snarky, shitty thing for the crowd to do, but he took it like a champ and took his shoes off and got a big pop and had a great match that was just like intense and physical. So I thought this was really good. I thought that the one thing I would say though is I thought a lot about rope breaks during these shows and after. And I think I'm for Matt Riddle not using them in his matches, but I'm like against them getting rid of rope breaks entirely. Cause I think that they do, like, if you watch like Zack Sabre Jr. work or people, anyone who like relies on submissions, like, you know, rope breaks are a great way to build drama. And it's like the cool thing about wrestling, I think, is that it's like genetically modified sports, right? Like you never have to have like a boring, like 8-3 blowout in pro wrestling, right? Because you can make it as like exciting and dramatic as you want. And if you have a submission wrestler, like those near falls are a great way of doing that. And I don't know, like, that's one reason pro wrestling is like better than the UFC. So I don't know why you would take out something that can add drama for, you know, all of your wrestlers. So that's after thinking it through more, my take is, I'm cool with them not doing it for like some matches as like the Matt Riddle special match, but I think it'd be a mistake to just get rid of rope breaks altogether.
Yeah, I thought it worked in both of these matches for Matt Riddle this weekend. I enjoyed it. It was something different and it lets them tell a story in a different way. So I'm cool with that. My main problem with this match was, so Riddle has this great mini doc I talked about on the last show about how he has just been focusing on saying bro and getting over. And then the first thing he does is get the mic and say, bro, before this match. And so we have this story of that they'd wrestled, twice before and split. And then Riddle wins here. But what's the story? What is Riddle overcoming?
He's just Riddle. Like, that was, I thought about that too, as he was like, I got to get more intense. Like, I was just focused on getting over. And then he like starts the match by walking out. He walks around the ring. He gives everybody pounds. He's like in it. And you're just like, I don't know. Yeah.
He lost the two matches last time. I don't know. I felt like that should probably continue so that he could overcome something and get an actual babyface, like a legitimate babyface run.
Or he like changes his behavior and he comes out and just walks straight to the ring and has like sort of a new sense of intensity where he's, really ready to go. I don't know. Yeah, it would be better if the story and the actions in the ring sort of connected a little bit better.
Right, because he wanted this no rope break match to show that he could beat Fred Yehi, and he got it and he beat him. And it really felt like he was putting Yehi behind him. But, like, to what end? I don't understand what that story is. So I thought the match itself was really cool. I liked it a lot. But in the grand scheme of things, I just really didn't get the point of it. The main event was the WWN Championship match with Keith Lee defeating Walter with Ground Zero. Now, this was a match that we both went into this card really looking forward to, AT, thinking, we're going to get this big hoss fight between two big, powerful dudes. For me, it didn't really meet those expectations. What about you?
No, me neither. I mean, it was certainly stiff enough. Like, you saw Walter's chest. I mean, they beat the hell out of each other, but it just didn't feel like it was super compelling, I guess. Or it was good. But it never like got to that that level that you'd like it to. It was a letdown, I think. And I think people said it was really good, but it didn't seem like it was getting the buzz. It felt like the match had less buzz after it happened than there was buzz for it going into it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, it was kind of a weird choice the way they decided to lay out this match, where Walter really controlled the large majority of the match, and Keith Lee was selling. And then Lee kind of has a couple of comebacks, and then boom, he hits his finish. And I don't know, I guess, we were talking earlier and you were saying, if Walter's going to lose twice this weekend, he's got to look really competitive in this match. I appreciate that, but I don't know. It just wasn't it wasn't a compelling story. Like, if Keith Lee is the biggest, baddest guy in Evolve, why can this other guy come in who's not really a regular member of the promotion and beat him down for 90% of the match?
Yeah, well, I don't know. By the same token, like, Riddle and Lee are this promotion's guys and are two of their three big guys. And if they were going to be, he was going to be wrestling both of them in the same weekend. Like, I don't know. I think my initial point is correct. Like, it makes sense why you would want, if you're like, you had to beat Walter twice. And if you had to beat him twice, like, you had to make him at least keep him looking strong.
Yeah. It just wasn't what I wanted.
Sure. That's fair.
After the match, AR Fox comes out. He reminds Keith Lee that he has held several titles in gay promotions and was the first Evolve champion. And he says it's his destiny to become WWN champion. At that point, Fox's crew surrounds Keith Lee. Lee basically kills them all with the quickness. And then he tries to come after AR Fox, but Fox uses his wife, Ayla, to shield him. And that's kind of how we end up with the weekend. But we're pointing toward an AR Fox Keith Lee match, which I thought this was really smart to immediately show that AR Fox is at the top of the promotion. When we're talking about this hierarchy that we discussed at the beginning of the show, we immediately know where AR Fox is positioned. Even though he worked one of the early matches on this card, we know that going forward, he's a top guy.
Yeah, well, I guess my one concern is that I hope that AR Fox is here to stay. Because in the past, we've seen kind of things like this where sort of a big indie name comes into the promotion. He wins his first two matches on a weekend. He gets a title shot, and then he loses, and he leaves, and he's gone forever. So,
well, he did have the little video on Twitter where he talked about how he was here to stay, whatever that means.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Great. All right. Yeah, then I hope that this is just, like, making it clear that this is going to be a top guy for the next 6 or 12 or however many months.
I think that was on Sunday night. He had a little video on Twitter. So
I missed that.
I mean, Gabe has used him in the past. I have no clue what their relationship is.
Right.
But, you know, Gabe might like him. And, well, AR Fox was working Lucha Underground, which I don't keep up with, but I have some sense that maybe it's finishing up.
Sure.
So, you know, maybe it is time for AR Fox to start working elsewhere. And, cool little fit. So, maybe that's what we'll get.
Yeah. I think they had, like, a pretty high profile falling out in like 2014, but obviously they've since patched things up.
Right. But is Keith Lee a babyface now?
Yeah, I mean, he was always a babyface.
Yeah, but didn't it seem like they were putting like a harder edge on him in the Riddle?
Yeah, but he was still a babyface. He's a babyface with an edge, but he was never like a bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's like, he's lost the edge now, right?
I think he still has it. Even if he, like, got beat up a lot in that match and, like, got attacked. I don't know. I feel like he still has his edge.
But they're definitely positioning Fox as a heel.
Yes. That's for sure.
If that's the direction is Fox and Lee for at least one match, I guess it makes sense. All right. Evolve 97. We've pretty well talked about our overall thoughts on these shows, so I don't think that's super important. We can get right into the card. We started again with the preliminary matches. Dominic Guarini comes back and takes on Craig Mitchell, who we saw at a prior Evolve show, but he was not on Evolve 96. And Guarini defeats Mitchell again with the Mighty Mouse move, the German suplex into the cross arm breaker. Not much to this match, so I don't have any strong takes on it. Anything more from you on this, AT?
No. it's quick and fine. Yeah.
Yeah. The End came out and attacked Guarini. And they made a point on commentary. Well, they laid out both guys, but they made a point on commentary that Catchpoint was not yet in the building, which seems interesting. But made me think, are we looking at a trios match down the road? The End versus some version of Catchpoint, but including Guarini?
Yeah, I think that would be cool. And I think that I also like the nice job by the commentators to be like, oh yeah, Catchpoint isn't here yet, so that's why they're not out to save him. So I thought that was a nice touch. And puts over the End as guys who are like calculating and picking their spots.
Yes, but I should not make any predictions about even matchups, because I made a prediction between night one and night two that the End would take on the Workhorsemen on night two. Like, the Workhorsemen aren't booked for a match for night two, so they need opponents. And I said it on Twitter, like, oh, the wrong boy's got this one right. And then James Drake replied to me, and he just said, hashtag wrong boys, after the match didn't happen. So thanks, James. I appreciate that, big man. Matt Nix and Stevie Fierce get the win over Brandon Watts and Stephen Wolf. Nix got the pin after a little double a tag team move that Nix and Stevie Fierce did together. Well, Fierce first did the Unprettier, which is his normal finish, but then Nix did a moonsault deal after the Unprettier and got the pin. Long way of explaining that. Again, I thought Fierce and Nix didn't get a whole lot of offense. Fierce did a good job of making the other guys look good, but they just didn't get anywhere near enough chance to shine here. But I thought the Unprettier and the little segment right before that outside of the ring looked good when he got a chance to do some offense. So I enjoyed that. But I thought, I don't know. I wrote down that I thought Wolf stood out the most, but like looking back and just from my recollections, I remember really liking Brandon Watts in this match. So hard for me to say. Who did you think stood out the most?
I don't know. I didn't like this much. I thought it was kind of like sloppy and disjointed. Like there was a, like Wolf fell while walking the ropes, stumbled off walking the ropes. Like there was a moment where there was like Brandon Watts was going for like kind of like a leg drop thing on Fierce while Fierce was standing. And like, I don't know who was on, but he completely missed. And like the commentary had to sort of do a classic pro wrestling, you know, it looks like he didn't get all that one, you know.
But they waited to make sure that he didn't get the pinfall.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it was like, yeah, there, it just didn't seem – it was cool to see the freelance lads sort of like kind of leaning more into, you know, kind of a chicken shit heel gimmick. But it seems like they haven't totally figured it out yet. It just felt like, yeah, this one didn't really come together from in my eyes.
Yeah, it was definitely sloppy. I would like to see, just because I've seen him do good stuff in freelance, I'd like to see Stevie Fierce get a shot at a singles match in one of these prelim matches and see how it goes. We'll see how that plays out. The last of the preliminary matches, Jared 120 takes on Jason Kincaid. And this is what I was referring to earlier. They paid off the time limit stip quickly here. And these guys work to a draw, which I didn't care for the match itself, but this was a perfect way of showing the tiers and how the hierarchy works in this promotion. Now we know that Jared and Kincaid are on the exact same level, and we've seen that Kincaid keeps falling down the card, and Jared emerges as the top of the guys who have worked singles preliminary matches. So very good job of delineating people here.
Yeah, and I thought that this was good. Like, I liked it. I thought it was a good, like, sort of babyface versus heel match. I like Jarek's, like, escape under the ring. It was fun. And I thought that the, you know, Kincaid fired up at the end and was going through for a flurry of moves as the time limit ran out. Like, that was compelling and exciting, you know, and it sort of, like, shows his continued frustration of, like, almost having, you know, the compassionate release locked in for the win and the time runs out. Yeah, I liked this. I thought it was... I think it was my favorite match of this night's prelims. And I especially enjoyed the end.
Okay. I just don't get the Jared. Like he worked the same match he worked the night before. All the exact same spots. They're all contrived. I don't know. Just don't like the guy. The first match on the main card, we see Shane Mercer and Kyle the Beast move up onto the featured card and take on the Workhorsemen in the opening match. What did you think about this match, AT?
I thought this was really good. This was like a good, solid tag team match. Mercer is so strong, and he looked great here. It was just good action. It was, you know, they had kind of like, you know, they had some good near falls with Drake breaking up the assault and the assault and battery after Mercer like rolled through a cross body and then hit it. And then Drake broke up the pinfall. And that was awesome. That was a great moment in the match. Yeah. I thought this is everything clicked in this. I thought it was like, after it was over, you're like, that was a really, you know, I didn't come in with super high expectations. I came out of it being like, oh, yeah, that was a really satisfying tag team match.
Yeah, one thing that I really liked about this match was they did a great job of escalating Drake's offense, which is something I've seen in his singles matches, and there hadn't been as much of it in his tag matches in Evolve, but this was it, where he really plays the big hoss throughout the beginning of the match, builds up and builds up. Then when he hits that moonsault, as a climax of the match, I find that really effective. And that worked here. I thought that was a great way to go. Yeah, Shane Mercer looked great too. This was cool. And I expect at this point to see Mercer and KTB back next time. And I'm looking forward to it. Okay, the next match was AR Fox defeating DJZ. Again, mixing his finishers with Lo Man Payne and then a little brain buster afterward. I thought this was another good way. I'll just keep talking about this, of setting up the hierarchy. So we saw the night before that DJZ can hang with Zach, but isn't good enough to beat him. But now we know that Fox is good enough to beat DJZ. So it makes sense when Fox was, challenging essentially Keith Lee the night before, we find out now that he's legit. Like he might be on that level, because we know that he's better than the guy who can match up with Zach but can't quite beat him. So I think this is a really good way of putting Fox right below Zach and Lee, and giving us a reason to believe that Fox was going to be a credible challenger for Keith Lee.
For sure. And I really enjoyed this. I thought, because it's funny, because it's like now that Evolve is moving more towards, the Evolve brand is trying to be sort of hard hitting, and we take our time and we let things sink in. And so when you have a match that's just kind of like a mile a minute sort of 2017 indie match where people are doing with lots of athleticism and guys doing cool counters to each other, it stands out. And this was great. This was just two really coordinated dudes like doing a lot of fun counters and moves. And I loved DJZ doing that slingshot somersault plancha or tope onto AR Fox while he was like being carried off by his posse. I thought this was a really fun match. This was one of my favorite matches of the weekend.
Our next match was the high stakes three-way, and ultimately Darby Allin would defeat Keith Lee and Tracy Williams after hitting the coffin drop on Tracy to break up a crossface. Yeah, Keith Lee in a crossface, and then locking in the Last Supper to win. Not a lot of three-ways in this promotion, AT. Did this one make you think, we could stand to have more of them, or did you see kind of why they don't normally do them?
I can see why they don't normally do them. This was fine, but it, like, honestly, like, except for, like, going through my notes, I have no recollection of what happened in this match, really. It was just like nothing stood out. It felt like there was a lot of like sort of the typical three-way spots. I don't know. It didn't do much for me. It didn't feel like it was particularly long or I don't know.
I kind of liked it.
Really? What did you like about it? Tell the people what you liked about it.
Well, it had some of the three-way, like the gimmicks that happen in three-way matches that I really hate. Like when everybody suplexes each other. I mean, they didn't do a Tower of Doom, which I appreciated at least, because that's like my least favorite spot in all of professional wrestling. But overall, they did a cool job, I thought, of mixing everybody in. And, there was none of like somebody laying outside for a year while the other guys faced off. They did a cool job, I thought, of making that happen.
Yeah, and one thing that I want to say now that I think back about it was, like, they did a nice – maybe I was too harsh. They did a nice job of, like, when a guy was out of the ring, like, one of them was, like, trying to go for their finish, because it was, like, they saw – they were almost like in a video game where, like, you're like, oh, this is my moment. I have to, like, hit my finisher now to win. Right. So they did a nice job of that. So that was maybe a little unfair.
Yeah, and a cool – I mean, an obvious but cool story of Tracy and Darby kind of teaming up at times to take on Keith Lee, but then going at each other, there was no alliance. It was just when it was necessary, they would try to team up with Keith Lee, which I appreciated. And another example of Tracy shining because, from a work perspective, because it was fast-paced. And it's just, that's the kind of Tracy match that I personally like. I know a lot of people are really into his normal stuff, and that's cool, just not my thing. So I thought this was cool. What I did come out of this match with, though, and the mini docs, the videos, is I might be kind of over Keith Lee.
Really?
Which I know is quick.
It's a hot take. Prepare yourself.
I know, but it's like just like the smiley, bask in my glory guy. Like, how can I find a way to shoehorn in my catchphrase guy? I'm just like, I'm mad on. Like, his work is really good. Although he didn't do anything this weekend that like blew me away work-wise. You know, he was really great in the two big guys doing really crazy athletic stuff matches. He's been really good in the small guys trying to take him down matches. And he did have a really good match not that long ago with Matt Riddle, which was just like a two-guy stand-up. So he's shown a wide variety of good matches. But I feel like more recently, it's, I don't know, maybe it's just that I'm over his character and he started to bore me in some ways. So it just carries over into the match that I'm like not excited to watch his matches. It's not compelling to me. So I felt myself, and we've talked about a little on this show, I felt like, God, isn't he just kind of a little too goofy sometimes? And as I was watching the matches this weekend, I thought, yeah, that's what he is, and it's not for me. So I'm just kind of, I'm moving on, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're being a little bit unfair because you're like, yeah, he's just not doing it for me. And then you named like five great matches he's had in the last 6 months, you know? Sure. I feel like he's had two weekends where he's kind of underwhelmed, right? Like the Last Man Standing match was good, but like wasn't great. And then he was right wrestling Darby and kind of like a match that wasn't designed to be a great match. So I don't know. I'm not like ready to, but it was only a few months ago that he had that great match against Zack Sabre Jr. in, I guess, Chicago. So it's like, I'm not really ready to quite say that like I'm done with Keith Lee. But I see where you're coming from in the sense that the character kind of feels adrift because you're kind of like, I don't know, now what?
Yeah.
And certainly, I mean, his hype train happened so fast that it was just like, you know, unless he could keep wrestling people who were as insanely athletic as Donovan Dijak and Ricochet, you know, every month, it was going to be hard to like continue to like reach those peaks on a regular basis. But I do sort of feel you in the sense that like he has not been as consistent as you might like. Is that fair?
Yeah. And I'm not trying to really be down on his in-ring work, although I wasn't as in love with his matches this weekend. I'm just losing investment in him.
Sure. Right. They need to consolidate these titles too.
Sure.
Because it's like, yeah, he has this title, but like, it's like the weird Matt Riddle and Keith Lee title. It's not like the real championship. It's just like the, whoever these guys are wrestling, titles. And I don't know, Matt, now maybe Tracy Williams is going to come after it next, but I don't know. Like, it doesn't really feel like he's like, Tracy just had a shot at that title and lost. They traded after the post-match, Lee and Tracy Williams traded forearms. Lee knocked him down. Then Keith Lee went after Stokely Hathaway, but Jaka attacked him, and then Keith Lee knocked him down. And then, you know, Chris Dickinson finally ran out and hit a big German suplex on Keith Lee, again making him look like this like cool, strong guy who like flaunts the rules. And they laid out Keith Lee, you know. So I thought that was like, I don't know, I guess if the next direction is like Keith Lee versus Tracy Williams, it's like, I think they had a pretty good match much earlier this year against each other, if I recall correctly, but I just don't really feel like I like need to see this title feud.
Yeah,
and it certainly doesn't feel like Tracy Williams in kayfabe has earned it.
Yeah, no, they had a very cool match, but I agree with you. Of course, if my hierarchy theory plays out, Dickinson to me is the one who's the most elevated in this segment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a Dickinson Keith Lee program would be really cool. I'd be there for that.
Sure.
Absolutely. So we'll see where that goes. But I did come out of this thinking like, Dickinson looks like one of the biggest stars in the company coming out of this weekend. And we saw on a Twitter video, and they referenced it on the show, that Dickinson was being kicked out of the building at this point. and, you know, kind of refusing to leave. You're not supposed to be here. Maybe there's some future punishment coming toward him for showing up when he wasn't supposed to. And he's like, hey, but I got to be here for my man Jaka's match later. So they're like super baby facing him. And it's interesting to see this. I mean, Catchpoint was a vaguely heel stable. In my
and then view. And then a few months ago, it felt like they were making them an even bigger heel stable. And right. then also you had, like, you know, Tracy Williams kind of like going after Keith Lee after this match, and then Jaka like attacking Lee after, you know, or I guess like Lee went after Stokely. So like kind of, I don't know. It's like hard to say. It's kind of muddled, I guess.
But you know, the way this show ends and then the way all these Dickinson segments go, it makes them at least seem like babyfaces.
Yeah. It feels like they should just break up already. You know,
yeah.
Like we should just do the one final, like Tracy Williams gets jealous of like the other guys in the group getting more shine than him, and like break them up and have them go their own separate ways. Cause it feels like Tracy is a heel and they don't really it doesn't seem like there's plans for him to be a baby face. And it feels like coming out of this weekend, you know, we'll talk about the main event, but like, it's hard to, you know, Jaka is so sympathetic and like, you know, I don't know, someone who's like a big fan of friendship and wrestling. You know, I thought that this was
that ruled.
You know, like, yeah, it was a really touching thing to see Chris Dickinson be like, I have to see my friend in his title match, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. Like, you kind of have to root for these guys, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The FIP championship was on the line. And Austin Theory is your new FIP champion after he defeated Fred Yehi with as Aaron very brilliantly put it in our rundown, some flinging head drop thing that Lenny Leonard called ataxia.
Yeah.
And I should say that Aaron confirmed with Lenny Leonard that that is the name of the move and that it means chaos. I'm not sure in what language, but it means chaos. So there you go. Theory's your new FIP champion. We talked on the preview show about how this could be a kind of a mid-card title in this promotion. And it made sense from that perspective to have Theory win it. Do you think it's going to keep showing up on these shows, or how do you think they're going to use this title?
You would hope so. I mean, why not? You're trying to elevate Austin Theory. Why not have him come out with a title, title belt and keep defending it? I mean, yeah. It works a lot better. Again, like I'm really like banging home the unification gavel, but like it makes a lot more sense to have this title as like the second title than it does to have it as like the third singles title.
Oh yeah. This company's too small to have three titles.
Yeah. And then the tag titles on top of that. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. So it's like,
no.
Yeah. That's my take. I thought this was a good match. And I think it was taken to the next level by Justin Barrasso's commentary.
Oh geez, did we bury that enough on Twitter that we don't need to bury it on the show? Or,
well, there's some people who listen to the show who aren't on Twitter, so you can, you know, we That's can talk true. About it for a moment. I think we were like pretty miffed about it. It was like kind of a lot for me, because like we made the joke on our last episode about Sports Illustrated writer Justin Barrasso, who's always like, you know, he kind of just like, I don't know, it's fine. Like, he just interviews Gabe and then, like, writes what Gabe or whatever WWN talent he's interviewing says, which is, like, fine. Not all journalism needs to be, like, super adversarial. But then Gabe, like, tweeted about, like, how he gets all this great inside information. He's this great reporter. That, like, kind of annoyed me, you know, given, you know, all the things that have happened on this podcast and, like, all the stuff that we've said about how, like, it was, like, kind of like a parody of all of our critiques of the wrestling media. And how, like, no one ever, you know, they never ask hard questions. They never print things people don't want to see. And we made a joke last week about how, you know, he's done such a good job as, you know, Evolve's publicist that maybe they'll put him on the payroll. And then lo and behold, he was literally the guest commentator on this match, which is just like, I don't know, like, I don't know, like, if you were, I don't know, maybe it's different because you're online. Who knows if this is a full-time employee of Sports Illustrated or a freelancer or what. But, like, if you worked at the New York Times and you, like, covered the New York Knicks You were on like the Knicks beat at the New York Times, and then you were like doing commentary for a Knicks game on MSG, which is like owned by the Knicks or whatever. They would fire you. You know, like that would be like a fireable. That would be like, they'd be like, this is a joke. How can you possibly cover this company in objectively when you're like a part of the company? So like, yeah, doing, you know, whether he was paid or not, like he's doing work for the company. I don't know. It was just like, you're like, it was like one of those moments where you're like, why do we even bother with wrestling? That was like how I felt in the moment. I was like, this is so stupid. I should do something else with my time. What am I even doing here? Like I like had to rewatch the match because I was just so like, I don't know. I was mad online. I've been gotten to. I've been owned.
Well, you played yourself for sure.
I did.
I mean, it's, if you're him, I mean, it's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for him. Not because of doing commentary on this show. Like, I think it's totally legit to do, to be an Evolve commentator. But to call yourself a journalist and then get on this show and commentate in kayfabe, which is like, that really annoyed me maybe more than anything.
Right, because it's like, are your articles for Sports Illustrated, are they real or are they kayfabe?
Right. It's insane. I mean, remember when it came out that like the Times owned part of the Red Sox? And it was like, okay, how can the Times, or the company that owns the Times owns part of the Red Sox. It's like, how can the Times objectively cover the Red Sox when their financial futures are tied up in some small way in the Red Sox? So, like, I know that we don't expect that much out of wrestling media.
Right, but we should be able to expect that the wrestling media won't be, like, the guest commentator on the shows.
Right.
And this goes all the way, like, all the way to the top. Because it was like Dave Meltzer, remember, he was talking about how he got asked to do
exactly,
the English commentary for one of the New Japan shows. And he didn't even, he was like, oh, I didn't want to, like, go to Japan or whatever. But, like, it wasn't, like, he wasn't, like, it didn't even strike him why it would be, like, obviously a conflict of interest for him to do paid commentary for a company that he's supposed to cover objectively.
Although in Dave's defense, like, he supposedly consulted with Flow Slam mm-hmm. on their whole thing, and then he never talked about Evolve. So maybe Dave can separate the two.
My man. All right. Yeah. Now that we've like been like really bitter and pissy and probably come off kind of like dickhead, like this is kind of a shitty segment from us, but I don't know. It was fun.
No, dude, I think it's legit. Yeah. Our tweets were way shittier than this segment was.
Yeah. Well, and
anyway. I mean, we've coined him with a nickname and everything. I mean, it's bad.
Yeah. So,
we should
like, the other thing stop bullying is, you know, or like whatever, like rude.
What if
I don't want to make enemies.
What if Justin Razzo's parents are racist, though?
Wow. Good good callback. No. Yeah. Anyway, right. That was the reference to the
Keaton Jones meme. I'm just going to call it a meme at this point. Okay. So the one thing I want to say about this match
It was a good match. Sorry we deviated, but it was a good match.
And like I was talking about earlier, you know, in the last match, Priscilla wanted Austin Theory to do the Super Theory KO, led to him losing. In this match, Yehi kicks out of the TKO, the Theory KO, and Priscilla Kelly then gets involved in the match to swing it in Austin Theory's direction. Theory breaks out this new finish. And I think it really shows, again, I'm gonna say hierarchy again. I think it shows that Theory is not above Yehi necessarily, just because he won this match. It really depends on Priscilla Kelly's involvement. I mean, it kind of puts him below Yehi in a way, and sets him up as sort of a paper champion that is really at risk of losing in the future, which is a cool story. You know, I hope they don't go down the road of like, Priscilla Kelly is banned from ringside for some future match, but you can play with that cliche a little bit and see how that works with Austin Theory.
For sure. Yeah. And it was good, Matt. I like the story of like Fred Yehi mostly being in control and Austin Theory, you know, putting together his big moves. And, you know, after the Theory, you know, and having to find a new finisher after the Theory KO got kicked out of twice, you know, on consecutive nights. So, yeah, I thought this was a nice little match, a good story and, you know, good win for Austin Theory that sets us up for some interesting things moving forward. I can't hear you. I think you may have muted yourself.
Sorry. Yeah. Still muted. The next match was Matt Riddle and Walter. Riddle comes out. And once Walter is out, he challenges Walter to make this into a no rope break match. Just like his match the night before, Walter acquiesces and Matt Riddle ultimately defeats Walter this is when I was completely sold on this, was that they did this interesting finish where Matt Riddle defeated Walter by a ref stoppage with elbow strikes. I thought that was a really cool finish. And it got me, I thought the match was okay. And then that really got me in on the match. I know it was the finish, but I was like, okay, I changed my mind, this ruled.
Yeah, it was fun. It was like fun and fast paced. It was kind of like all their matches are kind of like short and to the point, you know, and just two dudes going at it. And yeah, so I thought this was I don't have like a lot to say about it. But I thought that it was really good.
All right, let's get to the good one. The main event for the Evolve Championship, Zack Sabre Jr. defeats Jaka with a submission hold. I said it on Twitter, other than Okada Omega matches this year that come to the top of mind, just a great series. This was a great finish to their trio of matches. The chemistry between these guys, something I did not foresee, but something that just rules. Zach has taken on this harder edge. I know I've said that like 8 times on the show. And Jaka is so good at selling that it makes the matches just great. But the kicker of the match for me is at the end, Jaka looks completely destroyed that he's lost to Sabre.
And Sabre stomping on him as he walks over.
Yeah.
Dickhead. Oh, this was just excellent. This was just great, you know, because it's like, that's why I watch all this stuff, is for moments like in this match when, you know, Jaka is in one of Sabre's submissions and he's grimacing and he's going for the ropes. And you're just like, there was a moment in the match where I was like, oh man, I didn't realize that I wanted it like this whole time, but I like really, 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 really want Jaka to win right now. And that's like why I love all this. Like, you can have a million, you know, 4-star great move matches, but like for me, what I really love is like getting caught up in the moment. And like just really wanting this dude with a desperate look on his face to like get out of the submission and keep fighting. I thought it was great. I know you probably love the moment of Jaka getting his leg worked over and selling on offense. Quick, easy to pop Aaron Bentley. Yeah, Chris Dickinson coming out in the middle of the match, knowing that he's probably going to get suspended again for breaking the rules, to slap his buddy in the face and get him back into the match. It was just excellent. I mean, these guys have great, you said it, they have great chemistry. It was a great story. Jaka's facials were just so good. He's such a sympathetic baby face. And when he no-sells and he fires up and hits his German suplex, you're just like, it just was great. It was excellent. I mean, it was just like, I think the first match is still my favorite. But this was just like, as a 3-match trilogy, this was just a great story. And that's what it is for me. It's like, it's all about storytelling when I watch this stuff. And this was just a great, you know, 6-month story that they told with these two guys. And I hope that, you know, I hope that other people see these matches, because I think that people who don't watch this promotion don't know like how good Jaka can be and how like how well he plays this babyface role and how good these matches are. Like, for instance, like if you guys, I don't know if people listen to the Voices of Wrestling flagship, last week, like when Rich and Joe were going over the card, Rich was kind of like, "Well, you got Jaka and ZSJ. I don't really know." You know, it was kind of like dismissive of it. And I think we were kind of dismissive of the match going into the first one back in June. But yeah, if you've seen the first two matches in the series, like you would know not to be dismissive of it. And yeah, this was just really good and really satisfying. And yeah, I loved it. Great work to everyone involved. I had the whole, you know, it was well booked, it was well wrestled, you know. Dickinson was great. Ever on the outside, the story was great. It was just, yeah, it's good when wrestling works. It was funny too, because like earlier in the show, I was like, "This is so dumb. Why do I like have a wrestling podcast? Like, I should like find literally any other hobby. Like, why bother with this?" And then this match, I was like, "Oh yeah, like wrestling's cool and good."
It was definitely cool and good here, and I would just want to again combat your star rating slander by saying that the drama of this match is what made it a highly rated match. Mm. I mean, I went 4.25 on this. I thought it was excellent. Just really, I loved just about everything about it. So the end comes out at the end to square off with Catch Point. Looks like that might be a direction, some sort of feud between the end and Catch Point. Dickinson seems to be winning the fight, again, looking like a total badass. But Drennan hits him with a chair and turns the tables. I wasn't real keen on these guys using chairs, since they should just kind of be like big destroyer types. But the end of this, where they were destroying Jaka's knee, which was injured already by Zach in the match, while holding Dickinson and making him watch, I was really into this. Like, I really thought it looked good and it looked savage, and Dickinson and Jaka both sold it brilliantly.
Yeah, but you know, Jaka's getting his knee bashed in while the other two guys are holding Dickinson back, and he's trying to get this is a great angle. Like however many minutes of the show, from the main event through the end, it was like, this is good, this is the good shit.
Yeah, it was great.
You know,
and ultimately, Dickinson stands tall at the end of the show, gets in a dive. And I mean, I don't think we're just wrong boys in it here and seeing this where it isn't. I think Dickinson comes out of these shows as one of the biggest stars in the company.
Yeah, you would think so. Hopefully they'll, you know, continue with it. But yeah, it's like they, I feel like, I don't know, they have something here with Jaka and Dickinson.
Yeah. They definitely do. And we've talked about it a million times. These are guys who aren't big stars elsewhere. Like, Evolve can really run with these guys and make them their guys. And not that they aren't successful elsewhere, but this is where they are the biggest deal. And I would love to see Evolve run with them and make them more featured talents on these shows. Okay, on-air decision time, AT. We've gone very long already.
Yeah.
Do we want to continue with our year-end awards or hold these off for perhaps a short special show?
You know what? At first, I was like, we should do them now. But now I'm like, we've been doing this a long time.
It's like getting late.
9:40 here. Happy Hanukkah to all. We're recording Tuesday night, first night of Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah to all of our followers, listeners rather, who celebrate. We are, you know, we're glued to the TV watching these Alabama special election results. So, yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like time to bring it home, and we can do a nice, you know, maybe people are they're going home for, you know, they're coming back from Christmas break or, you know, maybe you're like hanging around hungover January 1st. And maybe, you know, we give you a little like just like a 20 minute or 30 minute year in review, a little. Snackable content. and do that. What do you think? Do you want to do it now, or do you want to kind of just do something short a little later?
No, I think we'll give it short shrift right now based on the time and everything that's going on. So I think it'll be better if we can split this up and a little short show for people to enjoy, hopefully, over the long holiday season that begins tonight.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's the decision. So we're going to close up here. We will be back. We're literally planning this as we talk right now. So I'm not quite sure when this year in review show is going to come, but we'll hit you with it sometime around the end of the year or the beginning of 2018. So look forward to that. And of course, we'll be back in January for the next Evolve shows, January 13th in Queens, January 14th in Brooklyn. Timothy Thatcher returns to Evolve.
Hell yeah. The king is back.
That's right. And Walter will also be back on those shows. So something to look forward to. And of course, we'll be back sometime right before the show in Queens. We'll be back with a preview of the January shows. So just want to remind everyone that we are proud members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, which you can find at voicesofwrestling.com. You can subscribe to the full network or subscribe just to Everything Evolves, the podcast network of your choice. No, that's wrong. On the podcast app of your choice, particularly iTunes. You can find us there. I'm supposed to get us on Google Play. I just remembered. I haven't done that yet, but I will get us on Google Play. So if you use that service, you can get us. Make sure to follow us at EvolvePod. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Aaron Taub is at AP Taub. Anything you want to add before we go, AT?
No, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
All right. For Aaron, I'm Aaron. See you next time.